presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about thoughts and ghosts. Welcome, everybody, to episode 67 of First Years. Today, we're chatting about chapter 38, which is the final chapter of Order of the Phoenix. We're wrapping up book 5, we're going to take a little break like we normally do, and then we're going to dive right into book 6, and I hope you are as excited as I am. So this chapter opens up with a clip from the Daily Prophet talking about how Voldemort is back. And it even calls out that even recently, the ministry was assuring everyone that Voldemort was definitely not back and everything was just a rumor. And now they're having to come out and say that actually, it's true. And I wonder what the perception is of the ministry and the Daily Prophet now from the public's standpoint. Because it's one thing for them to not be sure about Voldemort's return and be like, hey, we don't have any proof that this information is true and that he's back, but we're looking into it. And then being like, we found proof. Instead, they were insisting there was absolutely zero truth to any of this, even though there was some evidence that he was back. And now they have to retract everything. Do you think we're going to see a lack of trust in the ministry going forward? Or a lack of trust in the one news outlet that they have? And speaking of what we think, it's interesting to hear about Ron's injury. Madame Pomfrey says that, quote, thoughts could leave deeper scarring than almost anything else, unquote. And let's just pause there for a second. So thoughts are important enough to be studied in the Department of Mysteries. That's fascinating in and of itself, and we're going to talk about that in a second, because it makes sense. Because we do see some thought magic in this world. We have the pensive that can hold memories. We have legilimency and occlumency, which can maybe not read thoughts, but can certainly get into someone's mind where thought occurs. And the idea that thoughts can scar more than anything else is an interesting concept, and I think that it's true. If we think about how we speak to ourselves in our minds, or how people's opinions of us can affect us, those are powerful things that can really scar us if we're not careful. Same with the idea that thoughts can become actions, and those actions can then hurt people. Almost anything can be traced back to a thought. Experiences and then the way we process things can scar us more than the actual thing that has happened. It's fascinating that this is said here, and it speaks to how dangerous the Department of Mysteries is. They do some really dangerous work in there. Because just think about how thoughts can grow into such big things from small moments. Thoughts can sway people to behave in a way that they haven't before. You can change someone's mind with a thought. They're powerful things. So I tried to look into how we as Muggles study thought and what we know about it now. And to be honest, a lot of it goes over my head, but from what I could find, it seems that Muggles and wizards have this in common, where we try to understand thought and human behavior. And we do this through a variety of sciences, whether we're looking at the specific neurons that fire in the brain or through psychology and psychiatry. All of our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors tie back to thought and how we interact with the world. And And understanding why and how this happens is crucial to understanding why people do what they do. We know that the cells in our brains take in information externally and internally, and how we process that information ties directly back into our life experience and our behaviors. We have a conscious mind, which handles the awareness of thoughts, sensations, and surroundings in the present moment. And then we have an unconscious mind that handles thoughts, desires, and memories, all of which influence our behaviors without conscious knowledge. We can also see the brain at work when we look into placebo effects, how the brain can anticipate an outcome thinking a medicine is doing the healing, and it communicates that to the body and can get it ready for healing even if the medicine isn't actually doing what it thinks it's doing. So clearly, thoughts can have a very strong effect on us, mentally and physically. And seeing how we in the Muggle world study these things, and so does the Wizarding world, perhaps it's in our nature to try and understand ourselves by studying these things. Gaining a better understanding of how we work and how thoughts work can help society learn more and understand more how people work, which could be a good or a bad thing depending on how much you trust the Ministry of Magic. And I can't help but wonder if magic like the Pensieve, Legilimency, and Occlumency came out of all of the research that the Department of Mysteries has done. Have those been results of experimenting with thoughts and magic? Do we think that they're just trying to understand, or are they trying to add magic into the mix for a different kind of end result? What do you guys think? When it comes to the prophecy, Harry doesn't want to tell anyone about what he heard in regards to it, which I think is understandable. That is a lot to process for the one who was going through it, let alone letting other people in on it that will have their own opinions on it too, and who might be upset about it. I've said many times as we've gone through this book that Harry's had a hard time. He was forcibly isolated in the beginning of the book, and now he's still having a hard time. He's processing all of the information he's just been given, and he can't decide whether he wants to be around people or wants to be on his own. However, his humor hasn't been affected so far. He still cracks jokes toward Malfoy's verbal assaults on him without a moment's hesitation. But he's still struggling when he does end up at Hagrid's. It's hard to navigate both processing all of the information and realizing he's going to die if he doesn't defeat Voldemort, and also not wanting to talk about Sirius's murder because it's so fresh. Being alone probably isn't great because then he has to think about these things, but being around others is exhausting because it takes energy to focus. Harry can't even muster the energy to talk to Hagrid out of a bad idea. And when he doesn't have that energy to fill the space with other conversation, Sirius inevitably gets brought up and Harry just can't handle it and he needs to leave again. And like Harry says, with all the info he now has and how he knows his fate, he feels separated from everyone else. It says that Harry can't muster a sense of fear. However, something tells me that the fear is probably just buried underneath the fresh grief that he has for Sirius. It might be that we see the fear come to life once he's had some time separating him from Sirius's death. Harry really wants to avoid all of these topics. Thankfully, Ron shushes Hermione whenever she tries to bring up Sirius, but Harry doesn't even want to go to the feast for fear of Dumbledore saying something about Voldemort or Harry himself. One of the most heartbreaking things I think that we learn in this chapter is when Harry finds the two-way mirror that Sirius gave him, which not only convinces Harry for a fleeting moment that he might actually be able to communicate with Sirius again. But for us readers, we realize Harry could have used this mirror to see if Sirius was at home or not before fleeing the ministry. And that could have saved his life. It's tragic, really, to learn how avoidable all of this was. But in his disappointment of the mirror not working, he has another idea. And this one is even sadder. He goes to Nick to ask about ghosts. And Nick has been expecting this conversation to happen. And he has to be the one to let Harry down and tell him that not everyone comes back. Most choose not to. That when wizards die, they can either choose to be a figment of themselves, or they can move on. And Nick doesn't actually know what happens if they move on because he didn't choose that path for himself. But in this conversation, we get a hint at what might go on in the Veil Room. That people are trying to figure out what happens. So that's interesting. This conversation shows how devastated Harry is because he gets his hopes up again and then they're dashed again. Now, ghosts are nothing new in Harry Potter. We were introduced to them very early on, and of course, I decided to do a little deep dive into them for this episode. Ghosts are also nothing new for our world. They've been around forever. The earliest recorded ghost story dates back to the 1st century AD. So, for the most part, ghosts are thought to be the soul of someone who's dead and is capable of returning to the living world in some form. This belief of ghosts is based on an ancient idea that the human spirit is separable from the human body and it can maintain its existence after death. And for many, certain funeral rites are in place to ensure that the spirit cannot do that. Many ghosts are thought to be connected to a specific place because of a specific emotion or an occurrence when they were alive. But in Harry Potter, we learn that becoming a ghost is definitely a choice one makes, not necessarily something that just happens because of a gruesome death or unfinished business. When we think of a place that's haunted, it's usually a place that seems scary and was violent, but there are many ghosts at Hogwarts. Would we call it haunted? Hogwarts is very much deemed a place that is light and safe and happy. Although by now, as readers, we can probably question how safe it actually is. But if we were to take this connection that places tend to be haunted because of bad things that are happening there, what does that mean for the history of Hogwarts? This scene with Nick is juxtaposed by Harry running into Luna, who is posting about her missing things. People hide them, and Harry offers to help find them, and she says, "No, they'll come back. They always do in the end." Which feels purposeful, that her things will come back, but Sirius won't. Some things always come back to us, but people we lose don't necessarily. It's not a given. There's something about Luna that Harry doesn't mind. He can talk to her about Sirius without running away, and perhaps this is because although he does feel separated from everyone else, there's a connection that he'll always have with Luna. She can see Thestrals just like him, and she knows what it's like to lose someone close to her. Ron and Hermione don't know that feeling. They haven't seen death like these two can. And so perhaps it's that because Harry feels so different to others, he can't relate to them, unless it's someone who's gone through similar things like he has. Then that wall comes down a bit. Luna is optimistic, though. She thinks about death in a different way than Harry does. Perhaps because it's been a long time since her mother died, she points out the fact that they heard everyone behind the veil. So to her, they're not that far away. Sure, they can't see them now, but eventually they'll be able to speak to them again. They're just hiding out of sight, as she says. So perhaps her philosophy about her stuff turning up eventually is the same as with the ghosts. Things always show back up in the end, and loved ones will show back up in the end too. It just might take a while, perhaps until they themselves die for that reunion. When we get on the Hogwarts Express, we see how Harry has changed from the start of this book. He is still hurting, for sure, but it's a different kind of hurt than the beginning. And one of the biggest changes is Cho walks by and Harry finds out that she's dating someone else. And for him, it's not a big deal. He has much bigger problems on his plate now. Quote, "Wanting to impress Cho seemed to belong to a past that was no longer quite connected with him. So much of what he had wanted before Sirius's death felt that way these days." Unquote. We spoke about how unfair this situation is for Harry last episode, and this moment especially makes me sad. And not sad because I want Harry to care about Cho. It's fine that that didn't work out. But it's the fact that this is a product of Harry having to grow up quickly and not having the privilege to be a 15-year-old boy, where his main problems should be about how the girl he went on a date with and had his first kiss with is now dating somebody else. I want him to have those small problems be his main problem. I feel bad that he's 15 and now he has to be like, okay, it's kill or be killed. How am I going to do this? It's not fair. And it makes me really sad for him. The one thing that I feel like is uplifting at the end of this book is that this book ends in a way that is a complete contrast to how it began. So Harry opened this book feeling alone and forgotten by his friends and his mentors. And now it's ended with the Order threatening the Dursleys to ensure that Harry is treated well and can keep in touch with everyone. They make sure that Harry can correspond with them by saying they'll send someone to check on him if they haven't heard from him in 3 days. Finally, they learned, or at least I'm assuming Dumbledore learned, that Harry needs support. He's always needed a support system. Now more than ever. And he'll finally get it. Okay, so what do you guys think is in store for us for Half-Blood Prince? Who do you think the Half-Blood Prince is? I'm so excited to read book 6 with you guys. Like I said, we'll be taking a break like we normally do to prepare for book 6, and then we'll be back to deep dive into it all. Thank you guys so much for sticking around with me. I hope you are enjoying this journey. We're getting close to the end here, guys. I'm really excited. As always, you can find me at First Years Pod on Instagram and Verita Sarum on TikTok and Instagram. You can email me with any of your thoughts at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. And I will see you guys next time for book 6. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.